Welcome to this Monday edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Luann Crane, and as always, our host is psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. Dr. Dobson, today kicks off our very special focus all this week on the issue of life.
Well, ministries and churches all over the country this time of the year are pouring their time and their resources into shining a light on the sanctity of human life, from the moment of conception until natural death. And Luann, I do hope our listeners will make plans to be with us this entire week as we examine this topic from a number of different angles. A perfect place to start is by revisiting a conversation that we had with Senator Rick Santorum and his wife, Karen. And that took place shortly before Christmas because this couple has a passion for the preciousness of all life, which is very much related to their own family. They weren't with us to talk politics, but I invited them to allow our listeners to hear their heart for the family and for the unborn and for those who have special needs. And I'm so glad we're coming back to this discussion as part of this week's Sanctity of Human Life programming.
It fits perfectly, Doctor. Rick Santorum spent two terms in the United States Senate, and he and his wife Karen live in Pennsylvania with their seven children. As you mentioned, Doctor, this was recorded in December. It was actually the day after a presidential debate in Sioux City, Iowa. So let's pick up the conversation now on this Family Talk broadcast as you ask Senator Santorum about just how busy his days have been.
I don't know. Rick, you must have made a mad dash for the plane in order to get here. Either that or you got very little sleep that night because you're here and it happens to be 9 o'clock in the morning. So how did you manage to get here?
Well, just drove from Sioux City to Omaha and got in the wee hours and got up in the wee hours and took a an O-Dark 100 flight to Denver and then drove down to Colorado Springs. But coming to see you got the adrenaline level very, very high, and so there's no worries that we'll be napping on you during this show.
Karen, Rick told me that he gets very little sleep these days, sometimes 3 or 4 hours a night. Do you worry about him on the road like he is now doing?
I do, and I used to worry a lot more, but I just place him in God's hands. Mm-hmm. God is so good. He's taking great care of him, and he's keeping him healthy and safe. And we have our two oldest children who were so dear and generous to take a semester off of school. They're both in college, and they're making sure that he eats healthy and tries to get more sleep.
Tries to eat healthy.
Well, Karen, you had every intention of coming to be with us in the studio today, but your little 3-year-old daughter, Bella, has pneumonia. And as of this time, we're concerned about her. Tell us how she's doing.
Thank you, Dr. Dobson. You know, we love you, and I would have loved to have been there, and I'm so sorry I'm not there with you. Bella, thank God, is doing really well. We appreciate your prayers. She had a good night last night. Her oxygen requirements are coming down, which is a good thing. Her heart rate is now good, and she's having a good day. I had her up this morning, and I was doing all of her care, and she was smiling, and it was so good to see that smile because the last couple days she was not feeling so well. So we just thank God for the prayers. They really make a difference.
Well, Bella is your youngest child, and our listeners may or may not know that she has trisomy 18, which is similar to Down syndrome. I think it's called Edwards syndrome, isn't it?
That's right.
Yeah.
And she is mentally disabled. And yet she is a delight to your entire family. I know that all the kids absolutely love Bella. And Rick, she really wasn't expected to live more than a year, was she?
No, if you read the diagnosis that's out there, it's when they talk about trisomy 18, the words incompatible with life are the words that come after it. And we know that's not true. We have living proof that that's not true. But as you know, Doctor, the medical profession looks at those who are physically and mentally disabled as less. And Karen will tell you, you know, the difficulties we've had in the medical community and others who are walking the same walk with this disorder in just getting the hospitals and doctors to, number one, deliver children like this.
Right, yeah.
And number two, to provide any kind of care. I'll never forget, doctor, the pediatrician at the hospital saying to us, why do anything? This child is not going to be, normal. This child is not going to have a life. And Mama Bear had a very different idea about that.
Well, you told me several years ago that when Karen was carrying Bella, that you knew that she was going to be probably mentally disabled and that she was going to have all kinds of developmental problems. And I asked you a key question. I asked you if you had done an amniocentesis, which is the procedure by which you can tell what kind of disorder or disability a child will have. And your answer impressed me so much. You said,
Why
would I do that? Well, it wouldn't change a thing.
It wouldn't. Karen's father was a medical geneticist, and we told about the risk of amniocentesis. I mean, children die as a result of an amnio. There's a risk associated with doing that. So why would you risk the life of your child when it doesn't matter? It doesn't matter to Karen or to me as to what God gives us. This is our son. This is our daughter, and we're going to love and accept as best we can, and that's what we did. We knew there might be some problems. We weren't 100% sure. We might have some concerns, but it didn't matter. We wanted to make sure that because there was concerns, we were at a good hospital, and that we had someone there to adequately care for her if there was a problem. But we were hoping for the best. We were hoping that that she was perfectly healthy, and if she wasn't, then we were going to deal with it and love her no matter what.
Karen, you're a nurse. Did you feel the same way?
Oh, I did. I just feel like when you're expecting a baby, God gives you this most beautiful, precious gift, and you love and accept the gifts God gives you. I mean, as far as we're concerned, Bella is perfect. She is our angel from heaven, and I really believe God sends us these angels who have so much to teach us. And Bella has taught us so much about faith and embracing the cross and loving Christ and completely trusting in Him and growing in virtue. And her life is a complete joy. I'm truly honored, Dr. Dobson, that God chose me to be her mother. And I know Rick feels the same as a father, and her brothers and sisters feel the same. We are honored that God chose us to be her family.
Senator, my wife and I are going through this now. We turned down the amniocentesis for our daughter Lucy, who will be born in 2 weeks. Hopefully 2 weeks if she'll stay in a little bit longer. And we're in a unique situation. Our family and our friends totally support us in not finding those things out. Our doctor completely supports us in that. But there are a lot of people who are feeling a great deal of pressure from family, from friends, from their doctors saying, you must find out. Can you talk to them and tell them, what do you say to people who are trying to force you into a decision you don't want to make?
Well, they're doing it because of liability. That's why the doctors are doing this. They want to reduce their liability. They want to know for their own purposes, not for your benefit. Mm. And what you need to say is, look, if you're concerned about the health of our child, then let's go to a medical facility that can competently deal with whatever problems they're going to be, and be prepared for that. But don't risk the life of my child to have testing done. If you want to have a sonogram done or something that's non-invasive, absolutely. Mm-hmm. But the idea of having an amnio, there is a 1-2% chance of every time an amnio is done that a miscarriage will occur and you will lose your child. And that's, to me, an absolutely unjustifiable risk. For parents, they need to have the courage to stand up and say, this is the child. I love my child. I don't care whether they're disabled or not. And we're not going to have an abortion and we're not going to have an amnio.
Karen, you have 7 children living and 1 in heaven. Gabriel Michael. You named that child after 2 angels. I think that's really sweet and meaningful. Tell us about him, because you wrote a book about him.
Yeah. Gabriel Michael came 16 years ago. He was our fourth child, and we just felt so blessed to have him. We did get news with a sonogram when he was, it was about 17-week fatal condition. And it was really strange because at the same time, Rick was in the heat and midst of the partial birth abortion debate. Doubt in my mind that God sent us this most precious gift for a reason. His purpose has played out. And sadly, he was born prematurely, but thank God he lived for 2 hours. And I feel like we were blessed with the gift of that time. You can't put into words how painful it is. It's just excruciating. But the lessons we learned and the love that he gave and the things that he taught us, you can't describe in words. So I really believe that every child God sends us has a reason, a purpose, and we just need to love unconditionally and, cooperate in God's plan. And that's what we did, and we feel very blessed because of it.
Last night at the debate, I had a woman walk up to me with your book and asked me to sign it. And she said that she had lost a child, had a child who was stillborn, and she had grieved over that child, and yet she didn't feel like that those who were around her, understood her grief. And it was very troubling for her. It was something that really haunted her until someone gave her a copy of your book, and she said that was a healing moment for her. And we know that God, can make good out of everything for those who are faithful, and so we just feel very, very blessed that little Gabriel's life has had such a profound effect through Karen's, faithfulness in writing this out and sharing these most personal and private thoughts that she was going through, sharing that with other mothers and even fathers. I've had fathers say the same thing to me, that is just celebrated Gabriel's life. And I always tell our children, if you can accomplish as much for the Lord as your little brother Gabriel has in your life, you will be a great warrior for God.
Mrs. Yeah. Santorum, I'm so struck that having gone through that experience of losing Gabriel, then having to face that with the birth of Bella. I mean, I've been there. I remember giving birth to our last born, who is 14 now. I was over 35, and you would have thought I was geriatric the way they treated me in that. But we went through just a taste of that angst, and they offered us the testing and all of that because, as you said, Senator, they don't want to get sued. But just that 2 or 3 month taste of the anxiety of, is something wrong? How will I deal with this? What will the future hold? Had a profound impact on me. I can't imagine you having actually lost a child. Ryan, we know you've experienced this too. Then to carry on to term with Bella, you have enormous strength, Mrs. Santorum.
Oh, amen. Thank you. It's really hard. I will tell you that after Bella, when we got the diagnosis, I really struggled for 10 days, and I really was in a dark place. I love my faith, and there's no place to go but to Christ. But I will say, after that diagnosis, what magnified the pain was the fact that we had already lost a baby, yes. And the thought of having to go through that again, I couldn't even think of it. And so I was praying, but I felt like my prayers weren't being heard. I felt like God had just thrown me in the backside of the desert and abandoned me. Of course he hadn't. He was there working. I didn't see it, and I was so angry. And I could barely pray through that time. And I kept asking, why? You're just screaming, why? And it wasn't until I let go of the whys and embraced the cross that there was a peace. And there is no doubt that, in God's plan, he knows the whys. He knows what comes next. And what we know is that God's promise endures. I think of Romans 8:28, he works in all things to the good of those who love him and are called according to his purpose. And eventually when I let go of the why and I completely abandoned myself to his will and completely trusted in him, who I know loves me, there was a peace. But until then, it was sort of turbulent. It was very hard, I must say.
It is. It's difficult. We've been through it four times.
I'm so sorry.
In between Lincoln and Lucy. And Laura and I were talking about it the other night. She went into early labor again, which she did with Lincoln, too. And she was saying which ones were hardest for her. And for me, number three was the hardest. I know it's a cliche, but, you know, you hear third time's a charm. And I just never expected it. It was such a shock. It was a total shock to me that I wanted to quit. I just wanted to give up. I just said, I've done it three times. That's three strikes. It's okay. We're going to adopt. And it was hard when the Lord said, I think you're making a mistake. And my first response was, I may be, but I'm going to make that mistake. I'd rather make a mistake than go through this again.
Enough.
It was enough.
It was enough.
Yeah.
Yeah, and you have the tormenting questions. Why would God have done this? You know, you feel like he's so unloving and so distant, but he's not. He's there.
Yeah.
He loves you so much. It's just, it's that letting go. And for me, that was a very big moment of just letting go of the whys, because sometimes we're not going to get them, not until the end, when we're standing in front of him. And we had to give seven back to our Lord. And before Bella, we had five losses.
Ugh.
And I finally said, okay, Lord, I guess you don't have any more babies for us. I would have loved to have had 12 kids. I'm one of 12, and I love being in a big family. And so Rick and I planned a trip. We gave away all our baby stuff and clothing. And, and then 3 months later, we had the gift of Bella. And what a beautiful, wonderful surprise. And I think that played into the...
It was a surprise, but you know how painful it was actually to find out, because we thought, oh, my goodness, not again.
Yep.
And yet Bella has been a joy.
Oh,
a complete joy.
I can't tell you how much she has changed me. She is, as Karen says, she's gentled my condition. and she really has. I mean, she just... I love all of my children, obviously love them all, but there's just something, you know, just something special, because Bella, she doesn't talk and she, you know, she doesn't do a lot of things. What she does is love. Mm-hmm. And it's very...
She's the most joyful child.
She is. But the relationship I have with Bella, you know, with my children at school, you have a relationship, you know, talking about their schools and talking about academics or sports or different things in their life. With Bella, it's just love. And it's just a sort of an amazing experience that is my relationship with her, love.
Yeah, Bella is very much at the heart of our home. She is such a ray of sunshine and a source of joy and love, and it's the cutest thing, Dr. Dobson. When I'm in the kitchen cooking and baking, she's right there helping me. When the kids are playing piano, they have her right there with her, and they're playing piano with her, and we're playing board games. Bella's right there, and it's just, she is such an important part of our family, and I just can't begin to tell you how much this child is loved beyond words.
If I can, I was talking about Bella with a group of parents down in South Carolina who are special needs parents. And one of the parents after I spoke came out to me and introduced me to her Down syndrome son. And she said to me something I'll never forget. She said, he's not a great learner, but he's a great teacher.
But, you know, I think a mistake that some people make is that they so often ask with these beautiful, precious special needs kids, can do. And I pray that people will try not to fall into that trap of judging each other by what we can do, because it's such a utilitarian view of the person. And I feel like God makes these children. He breathes life into them.
Yeah.
And the fact that they are is really all that matters.
Mm-hmm. Rick, you graduated from Penn State University. You received an MBA from the University of Pittsburgh, and then your Juris Doctorate from Dickinson School of Law. And Karen, I want our listeners to know what impresses me most about you, that you have a law degree, too, from the University of Pittsburgh School of Law, and a BS in nursing. So you could have had one of two, or maybe both, exciting and fulfilling and financially rewarding careers, and yet you have chosen to be a full-time homemaker to seven children, and you're homeschooling them all. Tell us why. I mean, I know why, but I want you to explain it.
Well, I absolutely love my work as a neonatal intensive care nurse, and I love being a lawyer, and I had a dream job. And when I got pregnant with our first, I knew, like my mother, I think so many of us want to emulate our mothers. I have the most wonderful mother in the world. I wanted to be home with my kids. Mm-hmm, I feel like that's the most important job we're ever going to have. I always say it's like building a cathedral. You know, the invisible work of moms at home is so important. And I just wanted to be like my mom and be home and raise my children. We've homeschooled them for 17 years, and that has been a great blessing in our lives, a gift that God gave us. I have loved it more than words can say. Just the education and the, you know, everything you do is homeschooling. It really is a way of life. And so for me, I just like to pour my heart into whatever it is I'm doing. And so for these years, you know, while I'm raising my children, that's just where I want to be.
And Mrs. Santorum, that has been keenly evident today because, mm-hmm, as we said at the top, you were expected to be here in person in studio joining your husband. And you had to make one of those mom decisions. You are home tending to a sick child instead of just standing alongside us here. I salute you. I really do.
Oh, thank
and
you, Luann.
You are a true hero.
Thank you, Luann. I, as you know, I would love to be there.
The last time I talked to you on the air, we were talking about your book, Everyday Graces, a child's book of good manners. And I included almost an entire chapter in bringing up girls about that because it is so impressive. I do hope our listeners will get a copy, mm-hmm, of that book. It's still in print, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Thank you, Dr.
Yeah.
Dobson. I appreciate you including it in your beautiful book. Thank you. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, she's sold more books than I have, just so.
Well, this program has really touched me. And Ryan, I looked over at you thinking you were going to speak, and you couldn't because it touched your heart so much. And, Luann, it's obvious that all three of us have experienced the same thing. But there's more that we want to hear from this family. And let me just express appreciation to you for standing up for righteousness, not being afraid to do so, speaking often about the family, about marriage, about child rearing, about the principles that we find in Scripture. You have had the guts to do that, and with Karen, more than that, to live it out. Mm-hmm. And that is very, very impressive to all of us. So be with us next time. Well, next time is a few minutes from now because we're just going to go right on talking so you can get back on the trail. But thank you for losing a night of sleep to get here and be with us. And Karen, I agree with Luann. We're so impressed by you giving the priorities where they ought to be and staying home with little Bella and those other kids, seven of them. Man, you have been blessed. And we look forward to talking to you again in a few minutes, and that will be heard on the next day.
Tomorrow.
All right.
Thank you.
Okay.
Well, you can tell we certainly enjoyed this conversation with Senator Rick Santorum and his wife, Karen, about their own family and their heart for life. Here on this edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, we hope you have gotten to know the Santorums just a little bit better as well. Now, we first heard this conversation right before Christmas, but we are coming back to it now as a part of our special focus on the sanctity of human life this whole week. We hope you will be with us as we support the intrinsic value of all human life. If you can't catch any of these special Sanctity of Human Life programs on your local Christian radio station, you can always listen at drjamesdobson.org. There, I would also encourage you to request a copy of Karen Santorum's book. Again, the title is Everyday Graces, A Child's Book of Good Manners. Or ask about it when you give us a call. The phone number here at Family Talk, 877-732-6825. This quick reminder that Family Talk is completely listener-supported. We truly want to be the one place you and your family go to find the help and encouragement you need. So connect with us via the phone number 877-732-6825 or online, drjamesdobson.org. Even look for us there on Facebook. Thanks so much for listening, and we hope to see you right back here tomorrow for more with the Santorums on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. Every parent has looked into the face of their newborn baby and been overwhelmed by what a little miracle they truly are. I'm Luann Crane, and here at Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk, we believe that from the moment of conception to natural death, all life is precious and worthy of protection. January is Sanctity of Human Life Awareness Month, and if you would like to find out how you can help your local pregnancy resource center stand up for life, visit us at drjamesdobson.org. And be sure to tune into Family Talk all this week as we focus our programming on the sanctity and dignity of all human life.